All right, welcome to The Refinery. I'm your hostess with the not at all mostest. I'm Leslie, and everybody else is here. The Refinery is the weekly, just a meeting. It's not really a big show. It's a meeting with three conservative, grassroots conservative groups trying to figure out how to make the conservative movement a victory type of move, a victorious type of movement, make us winners and improve our messaging and all of that good stuff. And we've been meeting for the better part of this year privately and decided, what the heck? Let's go public with our meetings and get some input from everybody else and see if we can really make this all happen. If you would like to watch and chat with us live, you can do so. That link is bit.ly/lowercase the-refinery, and then there's a little chat window on that page. There's a link to it if you're getting to us via the Google Plus event. That link to our bit.ly website is in the Google Plus event, and I think JD is sharing it out on Facebook links. We'll get better at publicizing all of this, but if you want to chat with us, that seemed to be the easiest way for us to handle the way to broadcast a YouTube video, Google Hangout, and also have two-way chat with viewers, because there's the option of what attaching Twitter windows with a hashtag that we've decided on, or Facebook chats, or Google Plus posts. Too complicated. Free chat window on a website, and we just roll with it. So that said, I don't have a big agenda for the week. What about y'all?
I think that I mean there's a huge amount of stuff that happened since last Tuesday. I know we talked a little bit about the
Come on, overwhelm.
yes, we talked a little bit about the whole McDaniel Thad Cochran debacle that happened last week, and that's mushroomed into a ton of different things, and that's very confusing because you get a lot of disheartened people, a lot of people that are, torches and pitchforking, stuff. There's like mass
Burn it all
confusion.
down. Screw the Republicans. I'm going third party. Ugh.
Yeah, write them in or whatever. There's a lot of stuff going on there. There's a lot of legitimate controversy and stuff being raised. There are questions about voting irregularities, people voting in multiple primaries. And figuring out how to move forward without losing ground and without hurting our chances in November, not just for Mississippi, but for the entire country. We want to make sure that this thing isn't doesn't hurt us throughout the country, doesn't drag us all down into that nasty little annoying pit of despair that is Mississippi right now. In addition to that, we also have the Supreme Court hearings. We've got two decisions that were favorable for us in terms of the law. I'm not so sure how it's going to unfold for us politically because these are issues that the Democrats are going to campaign on. They already have, sent out their little mailers saying, attack on women starts again, and look at what these Supreme Court justices did, and this is clearly a Republican conservative agenda thing, bad stuff, panic, and you need to go to the voting box in November and vote out all of the Republicans because they hate women and don't think that they should have access to contraceptives, even though nothing in this ruling denies women contraceptive rights. It's just saying that companies don't have to pay for certain companies, certain closely held companies, family businesses, and the like, can refuse to pay for certain contraceptives. So, that's going to be a difficult thing to message as well, I think. But those are the two main ones. And if we get around to it, I definitely want to talk about a really, really great ad that we saw from a state assembly I can't remember, state house, a candidate running for state house who came up with an exceptional ad.
Oh, you're talking about Darius in Alabama?
Yes, I'm talking about Darius in Alabama, which is just an incredible ad. It went viral this week, and he got interviewed on Fox News, and all sorts of cool stuff happening for him, and he's a really good candidate from what I've seen, and has a really great story to tell. So if we get into that, that would be probably a good thing to leave on, because that's a upbeat story as opposed to the beat down stories that we have in Mississippi and possibly with the Supreme Court situation. So I would love to jump into the situation in Mississippi, but it needs to be talked about right now as it stands. There are like grenades being lobbed at the Cochran campaign from all directions. There are allegations that they paid for votes. There are allegations that all sorts of untoward stuff was happening. We have Tea Party leaders coming out and yelling at them, saying that Chris McDaniels should be the nominee, the Republican nominee, regardless of the vote.
Right. It's like, what?
And this isn't just any random, this isn't just some blog on the internet saying that this is this isn't a Twitter, this isn't a guy with two Twitter followers raging against the world. Jenny Beth Martin,
Tea Party Patriots.
That's one of the big national Tea Party organizations. There aren't they one of the ones that I read a story that with the McDaniel, when it became runoff time, there were two of the Tea Party organizations immediately started fundraising on behalf of McDaniel, and they pulled in one of them, and I think it was Tea Party Patriots, pulled in like $800,000, but then spent no money on Chris McDaniel. They just fundraised on it. And I think it was Tea Party Patriots that was mentioned as one of those. Did I make that up, or?
You're muted, Fishy.
You're muted, Fishy.
Sorry, entirely possible. I don't check those emails anymore. But I wouldn't throw that out without absolutely knowing which one, other than to say, that a national organization, is purported to have done that. But I've seen that pattern over and over and over. Because once you get to a certain critical mass in an organization like that, you are not nimble and flexible. You're sort of feeding the structure that you've built.
Right, isn't it that, step one is a revolution, step two is a business, step three it's a racket? Isn't that kind of the way it goes? There's a everything, all the path or the lifespan of revolutions. And I think that they're talking about how some of the Tea Party big organizations have progressed to the standpoint of being a racket, as the GOP certainly has.
Well, and there was something else.
And then you have to cycle back to a revolution, and we're at the point with the GOP where it's time for us to start the revolution within it again and kick out the racketeers at the top, I think.
Yeah. Well, and consider that this is not a new thing as well, the fundraising on the back of, say, Chris McDaniel. That's just part of the kind of thing that's going on in general. What you'll find right now, if you look through any of your feeds, are all of the petition drives over immigration, etc. So you'll find a whole bunch of politicians and organizations, share this if you are against amnesty or you know, sign up here to sign the petition to tell Washington no comprehensive immigration reform. And that feels like doing something, but in essence, you're simply swelling someone's mail list for them to solicit you and to message you. So, you know, I mean, you see that sort of thing in organizations and candidates all the time. It's just a matter of how efficient and how effective they are.
That's actually a tactic that we're picking up from the Democrats and that we've needed to, because we saw that the Obama organization and the leftists, they will fundraise off of anything. And they're always building up their email lists. And as soon as something happens, they send you an email and they ask for $5 to support their guy. And that's how they manage to always have the money to do what they need to do. So, you know, on the one hand, I applaud our politicians and our consultants and our advertising people and our political groups for finally figuring out that that's what they need to do. On the other hand, I hate it.
Well, and you have another national organization leader talking about how McDaniel ought to run a write-in campaign because he, you know, get the most votes in the runoff. And apparently, legally, I think there's a deadline that was missed if one wanted to be a write-in, and you couldn't do that as another party member. But, yeah, another national Tea Party leader, you know, messaging around this says, ought to run as an independent or a write-in. Yeah, okay. I'm just going to leave that there.
Yeah, it's crazy that you get stuff like that happen. You know, how irresponsible is it? I mean, to me at least, to be a Tea Party leader and to just spout off like that, to go and say that, hey, I saw somebody, I don't remember who it was that said it, but I think it was on your timeline, Fishy. Somebody said, so basically what she's saying is that Al Gore should have been our president instead of George W. Bush, because, you know, that's what had to have happened. That's I mean, popular vote, because popular vote or whatever it was that
Well, she was even going further than this. She was saying that there was a certain amount of Republican votes that were available, and Cochran didn't get as many of those Republican-branded votes. He got other branded votes, and so they are invalid by virtue of them not being Republican traditional votes, and therefore they don't count, and that the law... You know, screw the law. This is the definition of a Republican is this, and so he got most of those votes. So there you go. Doesn't matter what the numbers say. It's now we're going to quantify what kind of votes you got.
But you can't do that. I mean, if you don't like that, then you need to have a closed primary. So if they don't like the result of the setting that they've allowed to occur, then they need to change that. You have to go after the root, guys. You can't just change the rules as you go. Isn't that what we argue about with Democrats and liberals all the time? They change the rules to fit their agenda?
Yes, absolutely. And you see that. You're seeing that on the right, a whole bunch of activism that's being ginned up around something not going our way in a particular battle. And then all of a sudden, they're are people who want to talk about, oh, well, this law is a problem, or this needs to have a solution. No one's thought through all the other times that it might have benefited the right. But now that it's a hindrance, oh, we want to change that. Now that open primaries have exposed weaknesses in the Mississippi GOP, now they want to close them. That sort of thing.
So much for principle.
I believe the back door was left open, and you're going to have to deal with the consequences. You can make sure that it's locked next time, but it's done. It's the damage has been done. You know what they should be. I mean, right now, there's a lot of crybabying and a lot of whining and a lot of all of that stuff. But you know, there's a lot of justifiable outrage because of actual scandals or things that are that might develop into actual scandals. We don't really know all of the information right now. There's things that are still coming out, but back to that whole discussion about oh, we need to, these votes don't count, but we need to throw them out because they aren't actual Republican votes. Why is it that instead of saying, okay, you know, we know what we need to do going forward, that's something that we need to put on the agenda. Hey, we'll see if we can't campaign to make it a closed primary. Instead, there's a tantrum getting thrown, and we're moving into, no, this is how it has to be because we want it to be this way now, and give us what we want, or else. You know, they aren't even arguing from a point of strength. There's nothing that they're going to gain by whining and complaining about it.
Was there any of this sort of talk, say, in the race where Cantor lost his primary? I mean, when the conservative force tended to be on the ascendancy there, I don't know that I heard that.
No, there wasn't. And I've, having seen the Norm Coleman gentleman's loss to Al Franken and being so disappointed in the GOP's lack of strength and will to fight and fight hard, and the fact that because we don't do that, we will take the gentleman's loss. I absolutely support McDaniel and his people pushing to look at, you know, analyze the vote after the fact and look at and see, you know, how many people voted in the Democrat primary and then the Republican runoff, because those are absolutely illegal votes. You can't really prove it. I doubt it's going to turn over the race, but that needs to be fought. We need to fight fraud when it happens. If there is documentation of people paying for votes, we need to fight that, and we need to take the principled stance that that's wrong, and we fight it, and we will fight it always. It's not, but the crap about, you know, let's turn it over because it wasn't Republicans who voted, that's really, I disagree with that completely. That's trying to change the rules in the middle of the game. And while with Cantor's win, and I think you wrote about this, JD, with Cantor's win, right after that, we had every single conservative radio person taking credit for it. There was, you know, this, and it was Cantor's loss. Did I say Cantor's win? Sorry. I might be on Benadryl. With Cantor's loss, the conservative radio people, and I mean, so many people were taking credit for it. You know, a victory has a thousand fathers. And with McDaniel's loss, I didn't see a whole lot of people personally saying, oh my God, I really didn't fight hard enough. And I got to tell you, my first reaction with McDaniel's loss was, you know, I contributed to his campaign before, you know, in the first one. But after he won and got his runoff position, I didn't post about it. I didn't fight hard for him. I didn't make calls for him. I didn't donate to his campaign. I did nothing during that 3-week runoff period. So I felt personally a bit of responsibility for that loss. And no, I mean, and I know that, you know, that's my ego thinking I can control something and that making a blog post has any effect, but it might.
No. I was just going to say that's more responsibility taken than I've seen from basically everyone else out of Mississippi thus far. Like, that's...
You totally jinxed it because you didn't have your rally cap on.
That's probably true.
No, but that's exactly the thing, is that we haven't seen, or at least I haven't seen anyone in Mississippi on the McDaniel side come out and say, yeah, we screwed up, we didn't do everything that we could have, we got complacent, and just figured that we just ride this wave, this, you know, well, Ted Cruz did it. Ted Cruz was able to win in the runoff against, against an embattled...
in an open primary.
So it's like...
But he wasn't an incumbent. Dewhurst was as close to an incumbent as you get.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's right. I forgot.
But it wasn't an incumbent.
No. So it's just, there definitely was a failure on McDaniel's side. That's another thing that we really should talk about is illegal voting and bot voting and all that stuff is fine and good, whatever. If that turns out to be a thing, it turns out to be a thing. Regardless of that, somehow the Thad Cochran campaign was able to get a lot of black votes.
Yeah.
They were able to do that. They were able to go into Democrat communities and, you know, squeeze blood from the stone and get black votes out and vote for him, and, you know, that shifted the election. So if McDaniel actually had tried to go into those areas and tried to get some of those votes, we wouldn't be here right now. We wouldn't be having this discussion about MSN because he would have won.
Right.
Well, and let's look at that in two. There's two things going on here. The black outreach that the Cochran campaign did, whatever messaging or whatever the thing that they messaged might have been, there is that one side of the equation where they were there. They were making an effort to go there. You can agree or disagree with their tactics and or the tactics of people who were supporting them, because I don't know who did what. It's not quite clear. Robocalls, going out and working the communities, mail maybe, mail pieces, whatever it is, there was an effort. And then you have, on the other hand, the really crappy messaging that did get out from whatever source that was mischaracterizing positions of, say, McDaniel or even Cochran. There's two things going on. The effort into the community is laudable, absolutely. The messaging around some of the things that we're seeing coming out is completely different, and it is not helpful to us. And I think people being able to separate the two things, because what you're going to get when you talk about Cochran's campaign outreach, etc., going into these communities, is yes, and they went into the communities with the message that the Tea Party's racist, that McDaniel's racist, and blah, blah, blah. They're going to try to suppress the black vote in all elections, whatever. Okay, so be very careful when talking about this, that you separate the two things completely. That is something that we've got to watch. We are going to be fighting that battle over messaging for a long time.
I think that's right, because there is an eagerness to say, he got so much of the black vote, and isn't that great, and that's what we're supposed to do. But the problem is, he was selling being a Democrat, being a progressive, and he got the black vote because he was more Democrat than McDaniel in terms of philosophy, and he scared the black vote.
Race baiting. And exactly. Let's be clear, he is Cochran supporters, affiliated with the campaign or not. When you're using the term he, you mean very broadly Cochran and the forces surrounding him, officially or not.
Right. I am not a
lawyer, but I'm pretending to be one today.
And I don't give Thad Cochran a lot of credit for being aware of much that's happening, because I think he's actually senile. So when I say Thad Cochran, I mean his handlers. Cochran Incorporated, exactly. And I don't know if that's the GOP establishment or if it's more likely that it is the Mississippi crony government establishment of whatever party happens to be in power. I don't think it has much to do with Republicanism at all. It's all about Mississippi power politics and its cronyism and its corruption and its scuzzy. And I really hate the fact that at one time I really liked Haley Barbour and thought he was cool. I apologize for that.
I think
I was wrong. What?
I think two things. First of all, I think he went straight to the Democrats, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was going to lose. He went straight to the devil and made a bargain. Okay, this was led more by them than Barbour. I really believe this was led by Democrats down there. And number two, outreach to the black community. He will not keep one of those votes in the general.
No, not, I won't.
This was, hey man, I come from that side. All they want is to cause damage and harm. You know. So and it, this was. It was despicable. It was disgusting. But if I were down there, would I support trying to do a write-in thing and all this? No. I don't think it'd work. And I hate to say that, but we can't divide our side. He's despicable. I'd look at him and say, okay, you exposed yourself. This will be your last one. You get one more, you know, you get one more term in office. That's it. You're done after this. There's no way he can possibly win another. Let's put it this way. The guy he beat is going to be the GOP candidate next time around.
Sure, McDaniel has a long career. And, you know,
I don't know. I think McDaniel is toast if he doesn't win this challenge. Because of the dirty laundry, because of the angst, because of the division that's coming up, I think he has to win this or he's dead.
Yeah, but what I mean is, look, it's McDaniel or somebody like him is going to win next time around. I don't personally care which. Okay, I just want it to be a good conservative. I believe it will be next time around because if the Tea Party and McDaniel do not make this a bloodfest, they will become the more sympathetic side. And by next time around, there is no question that the GOP down in Mississippi is going to rally behind a good conservative candidate and go forward. If he wants to fight a legal battle and if you win, you win quickly. And if not, okay, get behind him then, because you cannot divide the vote. You cannot give this up to the Dems. You just can't.
Right.
I think that something to point out is that this is, as you said, Andy, a last ditch effort. This is a guy who's at the end of his career. He's like, you know, he's in his 70s, I believe. Thad Cochran is. He's been in office for close to 40 years, and he has essentially burned all of the bridges that he had. He's turned every bit of influence and everybody who supported him. All of those guys are completely, it's done. The fallout from this is it's not just going to be Thad Cochran's career that's over. It's going to be a lot of Republicans in the state of Mississippi whose careers are going to be ended by this, because they're going to lose all credibility for being affiliated, associated with this campaign.
Right. It may take a few cycles, but you're right.
Yes. Yeah.
Even with a lot of the quote-unquote establishment in Mississippi, now that they've seen the deal with the devil in hindsight, they are going to go for a more conservative Republican candidate next time around. This is you're right. This is the end of the establishment in Mississippi. They're done.
It's radioactive.
You know what? I think we do have that. The Cochran thing actually is a sign of a very happy ending, because if you take a step back and look at it, we had a few weeks prior to that, we had the Eric Cantor, Dave Brat thing, and that was so shocking. And we saw that was, oh my gosh, the GOP establishment got terrified, and they were a cornered animal in a cage. And what they did was, this Thad Cochran thing was their response to that, and that was a caged animal lashing out and fighting ugly and winning as ugly as they possibly could, and they did. But what have they won? It was a very, what's the phrase, Pyrrhic victory?
Yes.
I think not only is that going to harm the Mississippi GOP establishment, but it has shown that a win at all costs philosophy and a means justify the, you know, end justifies the means thing, that isn't what the Republicans do. That isn't, we don't like that. We don't cheer for that. Democrats will. Democrats care about winning, and they don't care how you get there. But I think there are an awful lot of genuine conservative Republican people that look at this and are going to step back and say, wait a minute, that was really beyond the pale.
Well, what you're saying
that was
is,
a step beyond.
Well, what you're saying is, first of all, for us, the ends do not justify the means.
Correct.
And therefore, we're not going to rally to that. Look, what I'm saying is the Tea Party down there is making a massive mistake. right now is your opportunity. Don't you understand? This is your opportunity to put away, to be the good guys. The establishment has shown themselves to be the bad guys. If you are the good guys and say, we disagree, you know, you're not there. None of us are there. But I mean, if the Tea Party, I'm talking to the Tea Party right now. Look, guys, you got to think strategically for a second. Think with your head, not your heart. This is so simple. It's being served up to you on a platter. All you got to do is say, we disagree with this. We see how this was done. It was dishonest. However, A, we're not going to help Democrats because that's not what's best for the state and the country. And B, we're going to go after the root cause, which is an open primary. And C, we are going to rally and unite and be the good guys, put in Thad Cochran for his last time, and then it'll be his last time. And then next time around, they were the bad guys, you were the good guys. Everybody's going to rally to you like crazy. My gosh, you could put in Ronald Reagan quadrupled across the finish line next time if you don't make yourself the loud, annoying, almost union-esque protesters looking bad.
That's absolutely right. But on the subject of we're not going to help the Democrats, I just want to bring this up because it left a bad taste in my mouth. But Eric Erickson of Red State, it was Eric Erickson, Fishy, who who linked it. It was, because just absolutely ridiculous to me in his little okay, well, it looks like Thad won piece. Put in the article, he actually linked. He linked, the nerve of this guy linked to the Democrat running for Senate in Mississippi. He linked in the piece in his article the donate page for the Democrat in Mississippi.
What?
Yeah. So in case you had any idea or any thought that Eric Erickson was a guy that you should, you know, support. Instead of putting a link to, hey, Monica Webby, who's running in Oregon, or, you know, Jeff Bell, who's running in New Jersey, or, you know, any of the other billion races that are happening this year, instead of linking to any of those guys, he linked to the Democrat running in Mississippi. So thanks a lot, Eric Erickson. You're a douche.
Really?
Yeah.
That
doesn't surprise me.
Wow.
It's kind of, it puts you at a loss for words, huh?
Yeah.
I just don't understand. It's so easy. You can be the good guys. They're the bad guys. Next time you're going to clean house. The future, what they've done is taken the future of that party down there and said, it's all the Tea Parties now. If you just want it, all you got to do is play right.
We have a comment in the chat that I wanna read, and this is the way that a lot of people feel. What's the difference between Cochran and the Democrats? The answer is nothing. What the GOP establishment did in Mississippi is appalling, and as a conservative, it is time to teach these people some lessons. I stopped believing voting for the lesser evil meme. So there's that.
That's true. But politics is all about voting for the lesser evil, and you can say lesser evil or the best of two, because your choice in politics, it's a binary choice. It's one or the other in most elections, and if you don't vote for the Republican, then you're choosing the Democrat, and even a bad Republican is better than a Democrat, because even a bad Republican is going to caucus with and vote on the Republican side on most legislation. He's going to be voting with the Republicans more than 50% of the time. Even as horrible as Thad Cochran is, he will be more than 50% of the time a Republican vote in the Senate. And he's one of 100 guys. It's not like voting for Thad Cochran is selling your soul to the devil. He's going to be one of 100 guys in the Senate. And having Thad Cochran be your senator from Mississippi as opposed to the Democrat gets us closer to having a Senate, a majority in the Senate. And if we have a Republican majority in the Senate, that changes an awful lot of things just from the mentality of what Obama thinks he can get away with, because he knows he can't push things through or count on the Senate to stop things because the Senate will be Republican. So then he'll be stuck with having to do everything through an executive order. And we have the media even starting to turn against him on all of his executive order things. So having a Republican majority in the Senate, even if it's Thad Cochran, is important and is better than a Democrat.
I want to address that too, because there are a lot of people who are thinking third party, independent, write-in, all that sort of thing. First of all, as far as the write-in thing, nobody liked it when Lisa Murkowski did it and won. And so that is a path fraught with peril. Mm-hmm. So why would it be okay for her, or okay not, you know, bad for her to do it, good for Cochran to do it again? You need to be consistent. If you're going to be talking about your principles that, you know, are overarching and that are matter more than anything else, and you are also going to say, well, that one in that case is bad, this thing, the exact same thing, is good, you know, no, I have no time for you, and I'm not listening to you anymore because you're not a serious person. But when we're talking about the gradations of conservatism and how difficult it is to get a really good, solid conservative that we can depend on to vote in a way that makes us not want to pull our eyelashes out by our own hands, we've got to remember, again, the learning curve that Tea Party, Liberty folks, we're on a six-year history only. This establishment has had 40 years, 50 years in some cases, of being elected, being entrenched, having the same people work the same neighborhoods over and over and over in all kinds of elections. Unreasonable expectations and people who are ready to throw up their hands and say, I'm done voting for the lesser of two evils, and however, those people are not thinking this through. If you want to stop voting for the lesser of two evils, that is going to be a long process, and you had better be spending your time getting better at turning out the vote, not talking about it, not blogging about it only, but doing it, getting out the vote, spending your time getting to know people and becoming an influencer, because then learning the tricks of politics, learning the policies, learning the procedures, learning the whole process, and getting to know the people who have influence and power and becoming one. If you're not doing those things, you aren't going to get better candidates in the first place. So I'm really, really wanting to make sure people understand that when you say, yes, the Republican is going to caucus more often with the Republicans than the Democrat in the candidate, yes, and your job is to make sure that that guy does that by continual pressure. If you're sitting home and every 2 years you're pulling a lever, or every 6 years for a senator, and you're talking about it to your friends and just, you know, bitching and complaining, and you're not doing things to change it, then I don't want to hear your argument about, I'm tired of voting for the lesser of two evils. Go out and get a better candidate.
Well, you know, if I could just toss in one quick thing, and I mentioned it up above here. That post there could very well be from a paid Democrat, robo-posting. Paid Democrats, I'm from that party, they seed conservative blogs and sites with comments like this: it's time to stop voting for the lesser of two evils. And, you know, what the GOP establishment did, yada, yada, yada. He even misspells appalling to be appealing, so he can come off as uneducated. Don't be certain at all that was written by a Tea Partier. Could be. But I guarantee you, without any question, Democrats are seeding comments like that all over the place in the aftermath. That's a guarantee. They're paid to do it. That is what they're doing.
Fomenters gonna foment. I mean, that's what they do. Moving on from the specifics of the election in Mississippi, I want to talk about what happens beyond Mississippi and what the impact of this race is outside of the of that particular election. Does this have any impact on the rest of our races in the rest of our Senate races this year? Andy, do you think this is going to mushroom into something worse?
I don't think it will. I think it could. I think it could. But I'm very confident that the Democrats, Corey and I were talking about it. Corey called it. She said, look, the Democrats didn't just do this to get a more liberal Republican in office. They did this to divide our party in Mississippi and beyond. So are they going to use it in this way? Yes. How successful will they be? I don't know, because I'm sorry, I don't want us to get overconfident, but November looks like a red wave. The distrust of Obama in poll after poll now, I never thought I'd see this. I really didn't. So I don't know if this will be enough. It'll
but
help.
The Dems are going to do every single thing they can to, as you guys are saying, foment dissension in our ranks and make us feel dejected and hopeless and that kind of thing. They're going to wipe out the euphoria that we felt over the Cantor defeat and focus on, the whole Thad Cochran thing. And they're going to take advantage of, whether they engineered it or not, and they're going to take advantage of people that are commenting that are legitimate Tea Party patriots that are disgusted. Because I think, all of us have our days where we're disgusted with all of politics and a pox on both your houses and all of that. And we'll express it. And then, along will come Democrats or, random, oh, it's a new profile of a blue head. I think Soros just got another contract and created another 20 or 30 Google Plus profiles. And they all joined the conservative union today. And we see that and we notice it. But the hard thing for us is going to be to stick in there and comment back with the optimism or with the rally around the flag boys and the, actually, don't you see that the fact that Thad Cochran had to get so dirty to win, that tells us that actually we're winning. What it is, it doesn't mean that they win. It means that they are that desperate that the only way that they can keep their position in Mississippi is to go that dirty. That's the last gasp of a dying elephant.
Yeah, I've had that discussion a couple of times on Facebook this week, talking just about that exact point. And I think that's an effective way to put it. These guys are there for 40-plus years, not because they suck at campaigning, not because they're bad at what they do. They're really good at it. And
right.
The fact that that in this case we have a guy who's been elected in the state of Mississippi since,
before electricity or something, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's been there forever. And
my lifetime. My lifetime he's been there.
And he was forced to dip into this kind of a dirty pool for tactics. That's insane. That's amazing. And that's a great sign. That means, we've got a lot of cool stuff on the way. But, I agree with Andy, by the way. I do think that this is going to stay isolated to Mississippi, and I'm not even sure that Thad is going to lose his seat. I think it's going to be tougher than if either of them had won cleanly, if McDaniel or Thad had won cleanly. But it's not something that I'm particularly worried about. The thing exploding out into a major messaging failure. Although I am curious to see if John Stewart is going to bring up the fact that Republicans have been harping on voter ID laws for a billion years and voter fraud as an issue, and the biggest obvious scary voter fraud thing that occurred recently is from a Republican primary runoff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we do need some, I guess that's just proving our own point. We definitely need those voter ID laws and stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Good job, guys.
Did I not see another North or a Midwestern state is now going to get instant vote registration on the day of elections?
Oh, my God. That is the worst thing. Well, I don't even understand that at all.
Which state?
I want to say Illinois, but it could be a different one, but it's in that region.
Oh, well, Illinois. Who cares?
Yeah, nobody cares about Illinois, right?
As long as it's a solid blue state, but if it's like Ohio or something purplish.
Last time I checked, Illinois has a Republican senator. They have one Republican senator over there, so you know it's Chicago. They have Chicago and they have Springfield, and those are the two cities that if they're removed, then it's a pretty solid red state. So. Chicago and the burbs of Chicago and Springfield and the burbs of Springfield are the blue sources in that neck of the woods.
Oh, man, T says Connecticut is going to have same-day voter registration this year. Oh, good luck. That's going to suck.
Well, it's Connecticut. Same-day
voter registration is terrible.
We had such a good chance there.
Yeah.
Well.
I was excited, but now, you know, I'm not.
Oh, well, never mind. Oh, well, Connecticut, too bad.
Sucks to be you.
You know, I mean, the four Republicans in that state are now going to be more outnumbered.
Poor T.
Oh, T just needs to move out here.
T does need to move out here.
I'm sure there are regional areas where there are Republicans and maybe, you know, some small little villages or something. Of course, I live in Texas. Connecticut is a small village to me because it's like, I think Connecticut's smaller than Harris County, isn't it?
I don't
There's
think
D.D.
It's like you're picking on my little brother. That's what you're doing. And it's sad because my state is only slightly bigger.
All you little baby states there east of the Mississippi and north of the Mason-Dixon. You little babies.
We were here first, so, you know, take that. Ask me
how many times New Jersey fits into Texas.
How many times does New Jersey fit into Texas?
30.
Ooh!
None, because New Jersey would never go near Texas.
Exactly. Yeah. We're far too smart. Speaking of smart people,
we like to see the leaves change.
Speaking of smart people, we have five of them in D.C. That were pretty smart recently with some awesome Supreme Court decisions. If we're all done with the MSN. If we're done with the MSN thing, I would love to move into that because there are already, you know, swaths of emails coming out from the Democrats campaigning against us using the war on women meme that has gained new steam and completely revigorated Sandra Fluke 2.0. You know, she's got her new cyborg arm and is ready to go and
Yeah, they're happy that this case came out the way it did, and it was very narrow. But they're going to imply that it was a very broad decision and that it's the end of the world, and most people aren't going to read it or pay any attention. And the left was absolutely ready to go with all of their war on women memes.
It brings one of my favorite rules of the internet up. This is something that the Democrats are masters at. This is like rule 10 of the internet, I believe. All your carefully picked arguments can be easily ignored. So that's what's going to happen. As much as we want to say, oh, well, this doesn't apply to, you know, no one is going to lose access to contraceptives because of this decision. This is not a nothing burger. In terms of actual relevance to women's rights, any of this stuff. It's a complete and utter red herring. It's tough to fix the damage there. It's something that they can campaign on and will do it pretty easily. The question is, how many races are they actually going to be able to utilize this line? Because we actually have some pretty good contested races where we have female candidates running. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see, but they are going to do it. Andy, do you have any idea how we can make this dull the impact of what is certainly going to get a lot of Democrats out and voting in November?
We need better ads. But I don't think this is going to change their turnout greatly. I think their base was going to go out anyway. And I don't think that playing up the Supreme Court decisions is going to help them reach far beyond their base with this. That's my prediction. I just don't think Americans are going to be up in arms about this, because Americans, quite honestly, are from the polling I've been seeing, Americans aren't too bad with this decision. They're looking at it just saying, yeah, why do you got to make one any company you want to go to, part of their compensation for you along with pay is the kind of benefits they you get to pick and choose. You work where you want. A lot of people, I just don't think it's going to rally much beyond their base that already churned out. Am I wrong there? Or, because I could be.
So you're thinking that the war on women's already kind of baked into the cake and that this doesn't enhance much?
I don't think that, the war on women is a great sales pitch and will continue to be. I don't think this will add much to it.
I don't know. I'm not sure about that, because I think this is good fodder for the targeted emails that, they go to certain aspects of their base, I guess, but it also is, the younger female voters out there are going to be swayed by this. They're going to, this is directed 100% at them. And I don't think that they turn out too often. I think this is definitely something that is going to push more of them out of the door and into the voting booth. So I don't know. But I'm also not the resident pessimist here, so.
I think it opens a great opportunity. I think it opens up a great opportunity to discuss what's really going on with this. I mean, there's so many people, even conservatives, who don't understand that Hobby Lobby isn't saying, no, you can't have any type of birth control on our healthcare plan. It's saying there's certain types of things that they're calling birth control that we consider abortion.
Wait, they're not calling all sorts of birth control, bad and evil?
And,
so they're winos?
Holy shit.
Oh, my God.
No, you okay? Don't fall off your
chair. I'm recovering.
The Supreme Court just outlawed premarital sex and all birth control. This is scary. We've got to get Democrats everywhere, because the Supreme Court just made, they hate the old people in the robes, and they hate sex, and women are not going to be able to work anywhere and can't have birth control.
Five men.
Five old white men.
I'm sorry. No. Four old white men and one old black man. So.
Right.
He's not really black.
No, that's right. He's an Uncle Tom. So.
He's. Well, and that brings up something fun, though, that I've been laughing at for the past 24 hours or so. All the people who watch Supreme Court decisions this time of year go to SCOTUS blog, which is a private blog that tells people what's going on, kind of boils it down from the legal perspective, but makes it understandable reasonably. So, and people in the legal profession and outside of it go and check that out. And it was such a fun read, because so many liberal people whipped up into a frenzy over the Hobby Lobby decision were commenting and tweeting at SCOTUS blog, thinking it was the official Supreme Court of the United States Twitter. And the comments were hilarious. They trolled all the people that they could, that they thought, that had thought they were the official Twitter of the Supreme Court. Some things like, this was the worst decision that the court has ever handed down, and then the SCOTUS blog people would say, we thought it was ordering the cheap Kung Pao chicken. That is funny, and it's funny because the ignorance and the outrage from people that are completely sold to the left. These are not people that are casually watching this decision. These are actual hard leftist people. And getting trolled and having their ignorance exposed, that's funny. I'm sorry, I enjoyed that. Now, somebody will probably tell me I shouldn't do that, but, you know, mocking them and whatever. Those are irredeemable people that we're never going to convert. I think they're eminently mockable.
Oh, yeah, and it's always important for us to make sure we understand that at least two different types of non-conservatives that we talk to. There's the committed leftist, that there's no point trying to persuade. All you can do is mock them and have fun with them, as long as it amuses you to do so and you have the time to do so. Mock them, make them look stupid. That's really all you can do with the committed leftist. But the people to be nice to are the ones in the middle that are not political, that are not decided on anything, that are persuadable. Those are the people we have to be nice to.
I think we need, you know, kind of combining your point and JD's question. I think we need ads. You see, because JD, you're right. They will use this decision, and they're going to have ads, robocalls, stuff like that, pushing that exact thing. I still wonder how much more it'll really add to the War on Women reach. But you're right. It could work. Yeah, direct mail, of course. We need ads connecting with people in the middle, asking them, you know, how would you, female, I love it, how would you, basically saying, you know, putting it in there, you're putting them in those shoes, how would you feel if, you know, you have these beliefs and people of other beliefs want you to pay for their choices? You see what I mean? I mean, how would you, and use some other examples, you know, how would you feel if, you know, you don't like this and people who do make you pay for it, you know? And you know, because people feel violated. I'll tell you what, most people, when you put it that way, are kind of like, you know, no, I don't want other people making me pay for their choices. You know, I don't go for that. And I think we need to connect with people on that, and I don't think we are. And I think that really hurts us with young women voters.
Yeah. Another thing that they're going to hit us on, and it's not just the contraceptives aspect of it. It's also the corporate personhood thing, and that's already started. You've already seen a billion tweets. Oh my God, this is absolutely ridiculous. And John Stewart, I think I'm sure he had something to say about it, but I didn't watch because I am not a masochist. I'm sure I'll get around to watching on Mediaite. But that's something else that they're going to do. They're going to push this whole conservatives think that businesses are people and. You know, that meme is something that is effective and that, you know, because there's this anti-corporatism outrage, there's anti-corporation, you know, period, not just corporatism, not just the cronyism that is involved, but big business at any kind of level, it just is automatically deemed unsavory. And of course they can't be people. Of course they can't have opinions. Of course, you know, go through the list. So figuring out how to message around that is going to be a tough, you know, some tough sledding. It's something that we've struggled with for a long time since even before Citizens United. So yeah. It's going to be that's something else. I think that's more of a base issue. But it's also something that has potential to cross over into independence. So.
But these are important things because I've seen, this is what was kind of irritating me today, is I've seen multiple blog posts from respected writers and thinkers saying that, yes, we have to change our message. And there was one at Hot Air about you know, the GOP can win the war on women. It can't win the war on women if you don't fight it. And then the article gives examples of what the left is saying in the war on women, their successful messages, and that we have to respond. But okay, I'm convinced. I'm on board. Yes, they were ready to go. As soon as this decision was handed down, the Democrats were ready to go with their memes, with their slogans, with their hashtags. They are on point with the corporations are not people and war on women. They were ready to go with both of those. And we can't win unless we fight. I agree. And I can't win by saying liberty, freedom, personal freedom, freedom, religion. That's not a message that wins. What is the message that wins? I'm not an advertising person. You know, where are our mad men that are sitting there strategizing and coming up with the advertising slogan for us? I know I need one. I know I need an ad campaign. But somebody help me out. What the hell do I say?
Well, we have one we could play if you want to see it.
Yes. I didn't know that it plays on the broadcast.
We'll see. It's only a 30-second ad, so at the very worst, it's 30 seconds of
Yeah, and we'll put the link in the chat.
Yes, so let me find YouTube. If you put the link in the chat, then I'll put it into the queue.
Okay.
So we'll see.
Because that's what we need is, like, you know, yes, there are people that still need to be persuaded that we have to fight the war on women. So sure, your blog posts telling us of what the other side is doing, you know, showing us all of their effective ammunition and showing us that we're losing the battle. Okay, it's important. There are still some people that don't understand we need to be in battle, but I'm ready to fight the battle. Give me some ammunition, man. Give me the ammunition. And that's what so many people are not, they're not coming up with, and I can't. I'm no good at it. So, Corey, Andy, you're up.
The difficulty, too, is that conservative positions do depend on a little bit more of an understanding on...
Sorry, go ahead.
Just legal opinions are different from, you know, talking points. There are hoops that you go through, there are statutes that you reference, things like that, that it does take a little bit of time. And so some of our best legal people who understand how to boil that down are not necessarily our best messaging people. That's going to be a difficult road to navigate, specifically about these two instances.
Yeah. Are we ready for our video?
I think so.
Everybody get your YouTube player going.
Yep. All right, everybody in the chat, there's going to be like complete silence for the next 33 seconds, so don't worry. Don't freak out. So here we go. I'm playing the video now.
You know, that's an argument, a way that we presented the argument over and over and over again last fall. And Andy just had a lot of success winning over, especially unaffiliated or undecided Whitman voters with that discussion, because what it was doing was saying, look, this isn't about denying access to care. It's about who pays for that care. And is it fair to force one person to pay for another person's choice?
Well, I remember when we went to Ted Cruz's event here in town, he was talking with a couple of other people, one of whom was Marvin Olasky of World Magazine, and there was a great discussion around this very thing, and he flipped it, and he said, what if you required PETA to pay for people to eat steak? And it's not a religiously held position in the case of PETA, but it is the same sort of thing. Ideologically, you have a view and you should be allowed to express your view, and you shouldn't be forced to do things against your beliefs. It would be like having a halal, you know, whatever they call them, the halal, not delis, but meat markets for...
Forcing a kosher deli to sell BLTs.
Right, or a halal, you know, same thing, to sell pork chops. You know, it's just it's that sort of thing. But even beyond that, just taking it out of the religious realm, in the PETA argument, having PETA do that sort of thing, or having folks that are with the World Wildlife Fund, you know, have to subsidize something to do with fur coats. It's the same sort of thing. Everybody has these advocacies in some place that touches them, and if you take it out of the realm of the emotional abortion argument and put it in those other places and talk about choices, I think it works better.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's a good way to explain it to people who care to know and who care to try and understand and be a part of that discussion. My only question is how many people are, you know, how you get into that discussion without automatically ceding the topic to the Democrats. You know, it's going in from you're already going in into a entrenched position, I think, in some regards. You know what I mean by that? Because I mean it's something that has been ingrained in people for, you know, a long time now, that there is this war on women, and regardless of our messaging, this is, you know, this is the way things are. This is how it is. You know, I'm not sure how we get into that discussion without, you know, on an equal footing, or at least not as bad a footing as we are currently.
We have to find a way to change to question the premise of the entire.
Yes.
Argument.
One thing to say I challenge your premise, because what most people,
you know, you don't say it that way.
When you say I challenge your premises,
you're like, what? Speak English, please.
Yeah.
But find a way to do that without them knowing that we're doing that. To find a way to pull their argument onto our playing field. And I don't have the answer, but I think that you're right on the tactic there is not to fight the argument that they're making, not to disagree with them, but to, you know, in what is it in the Eastern, you know, judo and all of those, you don't push back, you pull them over. You give and step back, and then you take them on your terms.
I think Andy would be very, very clear here too, though, in talking about those sort of things. The tactics that people are taught to use is, well, what about this case, or what about this example, or what about these people? And being able to recognize that when it's happening as well. And I don't know anybody who's better at redirect than Andy on those sorts of things. Maybe he has some input on how you do steer people off from those sightings back onto the main subject when you're the one who's you know, attempting to counter their narrative.
Now, which people am I talking to here? Am I talking to the people in the middle or the hard leftist?
Right, the people in the middle, but who've been conditioned to, you know, by listening to other people. What about poor women who can't afford birth control? What about, you know, that sort of thing?
Sure.
Right, it's the response to the leftist argument, but your audience is the persuadables, because obviously the far leftist is a waste of time. But but they're going to come at you with the far leftist premise.
What I do, well, first of all, the reason I ask is, if it's not somebody on the far left, then that means you can have some level of discussion, even though it's a quick one. You don't have much time to, you know, set the hook. The big difference with how I approach it is this: from, I would say, most conservatives, I assume there's a wall there between me and them. That wall is, they assume I disapprove of them, want to control their lives. They assume as a conservative, I look down on their choices. And I want to use laws that give them, that take those away because they're not my moral choices. All right. That is out there. That's the war on women. That's the wall. And so here's what I do. The very first thing I do is I affirm the reason they hold their views. Okay. So I do this all the time, by the way. I'll say, I just want you to know, I love the reason you're pro-choice. Or I love the reason that you're pro, you know, contraception. You don't want, well, let's just say pro-choice. You don't want, I love the reason you're pro-choice. You don't want the government telling you what you can do with your body. I think that's great. That's, I feel exactly the same way. I want to control my own life, not yours. You know, or I love the reason that you are in favor of contraception. You don't want the government controlling your choices. Hey, I agree. I want to control my own life, not yours. And what then, when they come back and say, well, wait a minute, you want to control this and this and this, what they just did is they just committed to a discussion. I baited them, and they got into a discussion rather than doing what the left has conditioned them to do, shut me down and walk away. So now that they're baited into the discussion, I can say, you know, and they say, well, wait, you want to control this and this and this. I can say, nobody supports all choices. If I want to steal that woman's purse, you guys have heard this one before, you wouldn't support that, right? If I want to kill that guy over there, you wouldn't support that. So the question is, how do we know which ones to support? On the left, they make it real simple. Everything we like, we want to make into everybody's laws. On the right, we use one standard. We support every individual choice that doesn't take away someone else's choice. Now, for some people, they think that abortion takes away the choice of the unborn. For other people, they don't think the unborn are people yet. Fair enough. But tell me this. Am I really some kind of monster who hates women? Or am I somebody who simply doesn't want one choice to take away another? Maybe we can reason on this. And by this point, that wall is coming way down. But the idea up front was to hook them by affirming their reason that they hold their position and then saying, and then coming at them and saying, hey, I love that. I want to control my own life, not yours. And hopefully they will then respond with an accusation. Because at that point they've committed to the discussion. Then you got them. At that point it's over. They might as well convert. You might as well give them a Rush Limbaugh t-shirt. I mean, they're practically there. No, I'm serious. At that point it's too easy. So that's the key. How are you going to hook them? How are you going to get them invested in it? First, take down the wall, be the good guy, which, by the way, I wish the Tea Party in Mississippi were going to do. Sorry, I got to say that again because I love the Tea Party. I am Tea Party. I want them to win. But then hook them in that way. It really does work real well. Is that how
well, and yes, and I think, again, this is the point in the show where we encourage everybody to go to thepartyofchoice.com to read everything that Andy has ever written, to watch all of the videos that they've put together, to read all of Corey's writings and her storytelling about the things that she's done, because this sort of messaging and this sort of consideration for where a person starts is so key. We lose that on the right so much. And this is what I think Andy and Corey are teaching us really well, is how to stop from insisting initially just on our position and then stopping there, but going to learn what someone believes. I was reading an article today about the Mississippi business, and it was written from the perspective of a black conservative in media who was commenting on what he'd seen in the campaigning, and he was very excited that Republicans were reaching out to black voters. Now, the problem that he had was that it was so long since anybody had done that, and he had a lot to say about that, but he was excited for the trend, but upset that it took this long and this desperate a situation to do it. And so the main thrust back and forth in this article was that they had to go and listen. They had to go and hear to be really genuinely I guess, getting the news of what was going on in those communities and being able to message to them properly. And that is something, it doesn't matter if it's an ethnic group or a racial group or an ideological group or an age group, you've got to do that. You've got to stop proclaiming your positions at first. And instead, start taking in feedback so you know the angle to approach. It's been life-changing for me to think of things that way.
Yeah, I mean, we have to understand that, you know, once again, there aren't too few of us. There are too few who know they are us. So many people who have a different view hold that view actually for a very conservative reason. They don't want to be controlled. They don't want to be controlled by government. So if you first validate that, you know, and then you can, then when you bonded with them on that, then you can come back and say, now, you know, I don't want to control my own life. I want to control my own life, not yours. I also don't want other people controlling each other's lives. Look, I want you to have every choice you can. I just don't want your choice taken away somebody else's. Forget about the unborn for a second. We could always debate whether they're human lives. But what about the person who disagrees with you on this issue? Do you want to take away their choice of what their taxes go toward, of what they're paying for? You see what I mean? You don't want your choices taken away by government action, by 51% of voting you and taking away your choices. Well, maybe you shouldn't take away theirs. Prick their conscience. They'll find they have one.
So here's my counter to that. And this is just because this is what I'm foreseeing. And this is what they're putting out there now. Why should your boss be in control of telling you what kind of contraceptives that you can buy? Or why is your boss in control of your health care like that?
Because the government needs it that way.
Well, first of all, my boss is in control of my paycheck. Okay, my boss is in control of all kinds of things. If I don't show up to work, they fire me. If I, you know, we contracted on how much I was going to get paid per hour. Okay, secondly, we got to keep in mind, I'm in total control here. I can work wherever I want. Okay, now, if this is imposed by the government, then that's a problem. Okay. Because then I have no choice. So the big difference is one side, and I'm going to just say you're the fascist liberal. Okay, you get to be the.
I can play that. I can do that.
I know you can. I know you can. I've seen you do it. The you wear the outfits. They're just disgusting. So
you sure he's acting?
No.
Okay, I'm going to get some hate mail from New Jersey soon.
No, but I would just basically say okay. Okay, so that's a good point. How can they control it? But here's the thing. Let's look at both sides. One side is saying if your side, you know, if your side gets its way, people are going to be forced to either pay their taxes to cover or be businesses. By the way, these businesses are run by people, actual human beings who have religious beliefs just like you and me, okay? They will be forced to pay money toward things that they think are killing. You disagree, that's fine, but they think these things are killing. Individual choices that are killing. Now, if they get their way, and if you get your way, they have no choice. That's the only way they can run their business. That's the only way where their taxes are going to go. If they get their way, you can still work in any of thousands of places instantly, anywhere you want. You see, the freedom that is being offered from the two sides, there's no comparison.
Yeah, and it's really hard because what I was going through, my thought process as I was listening to you, is it's hard to differentiate between the stance of somebody who is a full-fledged leftist and someone who is an independent who is legitimately worried about why is it that. You know, I'm being told that my boss is imposing their religion on me. That's what I'm being told. I'm being told that's what's happening. By this ruling means that now there are religious exemptions for things. That means that my boss is able to impose his religion on me, and I'm not going to be able to get the kind of health care that I want. And that I think that's where you're going to see the resistance from the regular person, because I don't think that they're I don't think that it's going to be the real shutdown. I can see some paths for shutting down conversation from the far, far left. But I think that it's that coming at it from the my boss shouldn't be in control of my, you know, my birth control, whatever. And there are so many ways that you can flip that. But
can I steal Prue's thing?
I'm sorry?
Can I kind of steal Prue's line real quick?
Please go for it.
Okay, Prue 61 has a great line there, and I'll lead into it. You know, I would just basically say, look, they're not forcing you to do anything. It's part of their compensation package. But Prue has a great point here. Prue says, well, Hobby Lobby could reduce their $15 minimum wage to pay for it. I bet nobody wants the pay decrease, which brings up a great point. Healthcare, they don't want, look, they're going to have to decrease everybody's pay to pay for greater coverage, which means it's not the company paying for you. It's all your fellow coworkers, whether they agree or not, with the coverage you want, okay? The very people who chose to come and work there with you, all right? So shall we decrease everybody's wages to provide greater coverage for more things that only a few of them are going to use, and that when all of them chose to come work at a place that wasn't offering that? It just makes no sense.
You know, that kind of parallels with something that we've been dealing with Obamacare. For a long time, these plans that the administration has been putting together, they actually make you buy coverage for things you'll never use as well. Not only that, but on the bronze level, I saw an article on the bronze level at Obamacare, you are paying full price for your contraceptives until you've met your deductible. So even if you are not getting your insurance coverage from your employer and you're on Obamacare, you're paying full price. What Hobby Lobby's doing is offering that negotiated rate for some of those things, but any of them on Obamacare at the bronze level is going to mean you're going to pay full price all the way up until, on every prescription, all the way up until you meet that deductible.
Is there an argument to be made tying in or connecting the customization that we're so used to, and certainly the millennial generation doesn't even accept that a band should dictate what 10 songs you listen to by virtue of the album that they sell. Millennials want to pick one song at a time. So millennials are used to full customization, and yet we're saying that there are only three types of health insurance that all Americans should buy. We're absolute, there's only three. I mean, and I think it was Kevin Williamson who wrote the article about everybody live in San Diego, you know, or everybody has to eat at Taco Bell. We don't accept limitations to our choices as a population. And yet the more you push things up to the national level on government, the more you're restricting and you're assuming that one size fits all. This is not, we are not a one-size-fits-all nation in any way, shape, or form, and yet anything that you push up to the federal level, any decision that you make at the federal level is necessarily one-size-fits-all. Is there a way to message that and change us from being victims of the war on women to being victims of the one-size-fits-all culture?
Yes, cell phones.
Because exactly. I mean, we don't even accept everybody has the same cell phone.
We don't even accept, you know, do you want it, you know.
We have multiple operating systems for our multiple cell phones.
I always ask people, do you want to go into a crowded restaurant and have everyone vote on what you get to eat? Okay. Do you want everybody to, you know, the reason you chose this cell phone over this one, and this one is because it gave you the price you wanted for the span of things that you wanted. You didn't.
And your decision was different than mine.
Right. And you didn't have to pay for 20 different things that you didn't use, didn't want, because you don't do these things with your phone. And this person over here, had to, but you weren't paying for their choices. Isn't it wonderful? See, here's the thing. We got to play up the we're being too negative, playing mm-hmm. down what they're doing to us. Play up the free market. Isn't it great that you not only do you get to choose? Oh, this, I love this. When you go into Taco Bell or something, I happen to love Taco Bell. Religiously.
Who doesn't?
If anybody doesn't,
they're communist.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you go to Taco Bell, there's two beautiful things here happening. Number one, you're choosing exactly what you want and paying for it. But number two, you're not paying for what everybody else is choosing.
I don't want to buy your chalupas.
Yes, this guy bought a bunch of stuff. This lady over here bought vegetarian stuff. I would burn that.
I sure as hell don't want to pay for it.
Kill it with fire.
But young people love it. Young people.
I don't even like Pepsi. I never buy drinks at Taco Bell because all it is Pepsi.
Well, they got.
But you're not forced to buy a Pepsi. You're not forced to buy a drink. You can buy your taco. Just buy a taco.
Exactly. Maybe we do we fight in favor of choice and against one size fits all.
Yes.
Maybe that's the campaign.
Isn't it awesome? And if you want, you can even choose to go work at this company that doesn't offer certain coverages that you don't want to use, which is reflected in their base pay. Now they don't have to take as much out of base pay for everybody. And you're not paying for it. Isn't it great not to have to pay for that guy's cell phone over there that has only two or three things and it doesn't have everything you want, or this girl's or her cell phone over here that has 15 things that you don't understand, which that's me because I don't understand any of these things. But, you know, isn't it great? Isn't it wonderful? What about the freedom? We're not selling freedom. We're trying to hammer immorality.
I got two thoughts. Anybody who's of a certain age that has seen the movie Moscow on the Hudson and remembers the coffee aisle part where Robin Williams is walking through and has a meltdown because there are so many different coffee brands.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. I do.
Beautiful. That actually was also an experience with one of the Russian leaders, I can't remember who came and visited an American or a Western grocery store. And how do you know how much to order? Well, you don't. These are all the things, all the choices. I have that in my head as sort of that mind-blowing thing, but also a gateway from this argument where we're talking about choice in employer that you could have. That's also useful down the road when we start making the argument, or you know, continue to make the argument more clearly when it's time, that insurance ought to be for sale across state lines. There ought to be all sorts of choices that you should have.
Totally decoupled from the employment and all of that.
Absolutely. Yes. That it's cafeteria style, check off the boxes you want from the company you want, much the same way auto insurance works now. It's that easy. So having that amount of choice, that staggering number of things you could do, that all the cell phones you could choose from, or all the cereal brands that you could have out there, that I think makes the case not just for what the situation that we're in now, but going forward, the solution of taking the employer, who would probably be very happy to ditch that responsibility. They've only mm-hmm. had it since what price and wage controls in the early 20th century, during wartime and everything, and depression. But they'd probably love to get rid of that and actually pay people the money that they are worth and let them go out and shop for their own stuff. That's additional fuel for that argument as well.
And for a company to be able to focus on their actual core business rather than having such a huge compliance department.
I totally agree with this, but let me throw a curveball. Well, the leftist.
Curveball. Okay, I'm already mad at you. You're threatening to bring me down. Don't bring me down, Bruce.
Your argument is a winning argument. Stick with it. I'm just
okay. Cool. Enough. Done. We're fine. End of show.
But no, the commie leftist curveball is very simply this. Yes, but by combining you know, combining so many people into one plan, they get you more for the money.
Oh, right. They save you money because, yeah, that gets them really into the weeds. And it absolutely doesn't save any money. Obamacare makes everything more expensive. But I'm seeing some commentary here on the chat, and the Obamacare old school thing. I'm beginning to see a thread of maybe like a consistent messaging technique or platform or style that we can fit almost every argument into, because Obamacare and all of the progressive stuff is old school, early turn of the last century. It's old fashioned. It's one size fits all. It was back in the days of everybody works at the factory. Yeah. And conservative plans and ideas are crazy. They're not written down. They're not all one size. They're not one size fits all. No, we don't have a plan because there isn't a monolithic plan. It's let the free market decide. But could we use some old-timey versus modern kind of imagery or messaging to paint Obama and his stuff as the old way, and our stuff as more comparable to the new stuff that people are used to?
I see an animation with the assembly line versus the creative, you know, explosion of solutions.
The 3D printer at your house.
Thank you. All sorts of things like that. I wanted to get into that whole Obamacare making things cheaper and the economies of scale and everything. Economies of scale would explode if insurance were sold across state lines. So, and that's how come car insurance is so cheap. So just so people are really clear on that argument, if that ever comes up, that Obamacare and that the single payer is such a big client that it's saving money, well, no, it's not. The absolute best model for that is a nationwide network of insurance companies competing for your business, driving costs down for everything.
Well, I just really quick ask people, when has one size fit all saved you money at anything?
Well, and when has the one size fits all shirt looked better on you than the one that was custom tailored? Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't work as well for you. It never saves money because one size fits all requires, first of all, that the shirt be big enough to house a 785-pound person. Okay? That's it. It requires that the plan house people with myriads of needs that you don't have. It has to. Okay? When has that ever made things cheaper?
Are you seeing that visually where you have this very, you know, petite woman who's trying to buy the blouse and it's built for someone quite more substantial and you see her with the sleeves hanging out? I mean, can you see the visuals around that?
Yeah, but I wouldn't
Alicia
do
the... Alicia and JD wearing the same shirt, yes.
I wouldn't do the ad with the Moomoo. I think that might offend just a few people.
Well, no, but you could see it with a guy wearing a shirt collar that comes way down here.
Yeah, this
tie, you know.
This shirt fits everybody.
Just not right.
You know, yeah. I mean, it'd be a good parachute. But I mean,
and you know, like.
That's the end of the ad.
Waiting in line for toilet paper in Russia, and you know, one size fits all, and all of the old stuff. Obamacare is our deployment of the NHS in England. I mean, that's kind of comparable. So yeah. Stock footage of when the NHS was a cool thing, that was in, what, 1948? Wow, that's hip and happening. And neat.
Which, by the way, outside of the Beatles, is the last time anything from England was cool.
Right? Doctor Who, come on.
Stones. Stones.
We could also put the Venezuela food lines that are more current.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Nobody knows anything about Venezuela.
Know that that didn't work 100 years ago, and it still doesn't work. Yeah, you.
God, they can't even get toilet paper. They can't even get toilet paper in Venezuela. So sad.
People are happy there.
Yeah, I'm happy. So I'm thinking that a through line of messaging can be comparing and contrasting the Democrat, liberal, progressive, leftist plans and policies are old school, one size and one size fits all. They're that all old fashioned. They all come from the days when the man worked in the factory for his entire life and he had the wife at home and he had the children. This is their stuff fits that world. And our stuff fits a world of Apple and Android and Google and Microsoft and develop it in your garage and customize it and print it on your home 3-day printer.
So if you go old school showing their policies and stuff, would you go extreme showing their heroes like Margaret Sanger and some of Woodrow Wilson's quotes and who's the guy that was talking about justifying your existence, the author from Britain? Like, would you go extreme like that, or would you just keep it generic, like breadlines and
you keep that like stuff that? You keep that stuff as your backup talking points. You don't lead with it because it's they can't follow it.
Too jockeying.
Right, because remember, we're dealing with people that have Che Guevara T-shirts because that's cool. I think that's cool.
But if you know, that is a really good thing. If you can make something outdated, if you can, that's your parents, that's your grandparents' generation sort of thing. Mm-hmm. People will respond to that, even if it's just uncooling something a little bit. It starts to lose its luster. Obamacare was a hip, cool idea because it was going to cover all these people. But when you look at it deep down and you start messaging it as one size fits all, old ideas, you know, this sort of thing, it's not innovative. And you contrast that with the companies that are moving and shaking today. You know, you find that most of the companies in the Fortune 500 weren't there 20 or 30 years ago. There's a lot of movement in and out. That's another thing. You know, the newness of those things. I think this old school thing is really brilliant. There's a lot of potential.
What about you know, clothing, one size fits all, and you could just say, okay, we got this. You know, we got this outfit. It's one size fits all. And then one lady, she's pregnant. She says, but I'm 8 months pregnant. I need something. No problem. We got it that. So now it jumps out there, right? Then you got the next guy. Yeah, but I got this, and he's got enormous arms and muscles. Okay, no problem. We've got it so it accommodates, you know, and you keep adapting it so it accommodates that. Well, I've got, you know, I'm 7'2". Okay, well, you know, I'm this, I'm that. And finally, you've got one size fits all is a tent that falls over a person.
Yes.
And say this is basically say this is what you're carting around with Obamacare.
This is universal coverage for everybody.
Universal coverage for everybody. You're paying for a lot of material that you're not using.
I like it. How can we get that made?
What do you think?
Something. I think it'd be even funnier on the runway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
And so now who do we have that has those skills?
Gives JD yet another chance to prance.
Oh!
Nothing to be ashamed of, sir.
Glide.
Corey says glide, not prance. Glide.
Prance on the runway. You glide on it.
I just want you to do the spin and look back confidently at the camera.
I am a very elegant person. I'm very fluid. I could totally pull that off.
Graceful.
What would be good, though, is to do kind of a series of ads. I like what Prue is talking about here with the cell phones. That's another way to do it. And so basically, you know, have the one-size-fits-all with the with on the runway, the one size fits all then on cell phones. it has this and this and this and this, and by the time it's done, it looks like one of those old Army phones. Everything on it, you know. That would be kind of fun, you know, and just have one size fits all, and just have the guy, have the spokesperson at the end of it just look at it and just say, and it's expensive. Just so you know, this is really expensive. Make it simple so they can understand it, you know. It doesn't fit you, and it's really expensive.
I think that's a brilliant idea. I think that visual, that one size fits all visual, on the catwalk, that's brilliant. I really that's something that needs to be made. I think that's a great idea, and if only one of those Koch brothers was watching, I'm sure they would write a fat check for that. Because that's far, far, far better than the Uncle Sam, creepy Uncle Sam with the
creepy Uncle Sam at the OB's office, staring in between the woman's legs.
That's the
Who
one.
Who thought that was a good idea? Who?
What?
You've never seen that?
Oh my God!
Oh man, how could you have never seen that?
We work.
Yeah.
You work in the industry.
I mean, this
okay,
is, this,
now
this
I'm
is
going
a
to
huge,
look for the creepy
this is a
Uncle
huge
Sam.
Video. This video, like everybody knows this.
What is this creepy Uncle Sam also troll the kindergartens and things like that and hang out on the web a little too long and
No. It was specifically around Obamacare.
Yes.
And your visits to the doctor and Uncle Sam.
What I mean is you say looking at women's skirts and so I'm like, whoa.
No.
No, that was in the doctor's office.
Yes.
There's a creepy Uncle Sam about to conduct a rectal exam.
Yes, there's that one where with the glove snap. That
yes.
That was slightly less creepy.
Okay, I'm going to put this...
Forceps, it was...
okay, that's...
Whatever the hell it is. I can't think of the real word for that shit. Oh! Sorry!
It's okay.
You thought of the real word for it.
Right?
It's after 11, it's okay.
See how that worked out?
This is my first time messing up on that since I was told.
It was not me. Everybody noticed the cussing was not me this time.
But anyway, suffice it to say, it was a really creepy ad that the Koch brothers put out through one of their, you know, organizations, and
it was GenOp.
Was it GenOp?
Yep.
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't the worst ad because it definitely generated lots of conversation. You know, it was something that caused controversy and people were like, oh my God, it went so far. It's so lame or scary or stupid or whatever. So everybody talked about it. So it was a success in that way. But that's nothing compared to what I, you know, when I envision the Obamacare at the fashion show, there's no comparison. It's just a flat out better idea.
Okay, here's I found the creepy Uncle Sam in its opt out. There you go. That's in the chat now. Creepy Uncle Sam with this young pretty girl at the gynecologist office. Yeah, just so very wrong. I mean, I understood the point that they were trying to make, that, you know, with Obamacare, you're putting the government all up in your business. And it's true, you know, there are so many arguments that we could make now because the IRS is now in charge of your healthcare records. Who wants that to be? Who is happy about that? And, you know, we don't... Trust in the federal government is at all-time lows, and we are putting more and more of our personal information and control of our lives in their hands. That's just absolutely illogical, but because it's in the guise of don't you care about poor people, and there are people who, you know, need our help and can't afford their birth control, and you know, all, it's all in the under the guise of caring and sensitivity and generosity and all of that kind of stuff. So we're not allowed to say that that's bad, evil, or wrong. So I think the answer of arguing that it's old school and it's one size fits all is perhaps a better way to make the argument, because our current arguments are not working. You know, we can talk about how scary it is to put all of our healthcare stuff in the hands of the IRS all day long, but the fact of the matter is people would rather be kind, generous, and caring for poor people, and that's a stronger pull than the pull against giving your healthcare information to the IRS. I don't know why, but the argument about take control of your own life, not theirs, that argument isn't as powerful, I think, or as immediately powerful. That's an argument that wins if you have the time to talk to them. But I think a poster or a 30-second video showing that most of the progressive platform is old-fashioned and one-size-fits-all, that's something that can get you in the door and get you the opportunity to talk about these other things, I think. I don't know.
Well, Kevin Williamson, in the piece that you referenced earlier, Shut Up and Have a Cheeseburger, he's talking about there's a lot of people who believe that, you know, have this great conceit that, they call it in economics, that they can, the fatal conceit is what Hayek called it, that other people can make decisions. You know, there are people that can be smart enough to make decisions for other people. And while that is a grand, you know, great planner kind of philosophy, there are plenty of us who are quite critical of other people's lives and can point out problems that other people are having quite a bit more easily than looking at our own lives and dealing with our own problems. So it's easy to look down on, even in a paternalistic sort of way, and say, well, they need help. They haven't got the advantages. They aren't able to do the kind of thing. It's the same thing they use when they're all racist, talking about how affirmative action needs to be in place because certain groups can't compete. It's that sort of arrogance that says that, you know, whatever's going on in my own life, I know what's wrong with that person and how to fix that person. And helping is one thing, but designing someone else's life or trying to guide them rather forcefully through government policy is a completely different one. And I think if we articulate that properly, you know, letting people be in charge of their life, using those choice versus control sort of things, making it an obvious contrast between the old school factory assembly, one size fits all as is, versus the innovation and the technology and the exponential creativity that's going on. Those sort of things, I think, will play a little bit easier and steer people away from that paternalistic kind of, oh, we must help all of the X group, you know, which is a really horrible thing when you get to think about it, that you know better than somebody else how to run their life, so you're just going to do it.
Well, and that's so much of the progressive premise. You know, Woodrow Wilson was all about having the wise advisor bureaucracy that would make the decisions for the hoi polloi who don't know what they need and would make bad decisions. And there are an awful lot of people on both sides of the political divide who want to make better decisions for the stupid people out there.
Better decisions for the stupid people, yes.
Right.
That's how they think of it, even if they don't articulate it that way.
Right. Because I'm smart and everyone else is stupid.
Yeah. Or the heathens that don't believe that the world is getting warmer because of humans, or the rest of the ideological groups that have their pet, you know, cause. So yeah, there's a lot of that out there.
Yeah, and we have to fight against that. But it's one thing to write write posts and articles about don't call people stupid and don't be, you know, fight, don't be doing this. But it's much easier to get people to follow along with you if you have something for them to follow. And I think if we can start having good messaging that we want out there of the kind of one size fits all, old versus new, we're Apple, they are, I don't know, think of a old-timey manufacturer that's gone out of business. They're Sears Roebuck.
Kind of, who?
Yeah, right? Sears Roebuck. I'm not talking the new softer side of Sears. They are Sears Roebuck with the catalog that's in your outhouse. Because it's the, you know, the one size fits all buy your house via the Sears catalog. If we can have some of that and just start having something to push, then we push that and people will agree and follow, and it can maybe become something positive that's out there that gets replicated. Because it is important to explain what we don't do, but we have to have, we can't be just creating a vacuum. We have to have something positive. And yeah, Fishy, talk to Corey over at GenOp and see if they can put some of this stuff together and have it be. We just need something out there that gets the idea triggered, and then other organizations and other groups will say, oh, you know, that's an interesting way to talk about it. And they'll say, oh, okay, the one size fits all. That's a good way to think about things. I'll write a cartoon about it. I'll make a video about it. And then it can just sort of take on a life of its own, because I think it's a good philosophical message kind of thing.
And then when it gets huge, then we all get, you know, six-figure salaries and cushy offices in D.C., right? That's what we're trying for. That's what we're shooting for.
I want money. I like money.
I want to oppress people. So if the person gets me that, I'm good.
Nice. These are things that we could definitely mock up in a small way and then present. And probably we should keep a running list of concepts, you know, somewhere maybe in the Conservative Union.
I wrote it down in the Google Doc that we've got on this.
Good, good. I'm just thinking more eyes, more hands, yeah, more brains on it too. But being able to see who we have in this, you know, large network that has the ability to do even just mock-ups, even just storyboarding something, mm-hmm, that would be able to be presentable. It's great to tell your concept to somebody. It's even better to show it.
Right.
To be able to do those things, and perhaps we start talking about archaic government policies and government control. It's very interesting that there is so much that government does that's wrong that we can point to it, but yet we're having a difficult time messaging that this is a symptom of a greater problem, which is that government shouldn't be in charge of making decisions for us.
I'm making notes. Carry on.
No, I think that that's an overarching theme. If our idea long term as conservatives, as you know, conservatarians, whatever you'd like to call it, is to pry people away from the idea of government being able to be competent and efficient and caring and compassionate, those things don't come from government, and government more often gets things wrong when they get into those levels of management, because they were not designed to do that. People are better decision makers on their own, and they know what's best for them, and one size does not, in fact, fit all. There are a few things. Yeah, I don't want to drive on 800 different roads. I'd like to have a fewer roads than that, but I would definitely like to have more choices in my healthcare or my clothing or my cell phones or my entertainment packages, that sort of thing. So the more we message about the overarching thing that, oops, government did it again. Look how outdated. Look how archaic. You know, that's totally 1930s thinking. Now we're in the 21st century, blah, blah, blah. You know, life is faster. Life is more different. Everything that we're talking about, customization, I bet you, come to think of it, I bet you that if you go through Frank Luntz's Words That Work, that customization is in there.
I want to just talk about this. This is something that I think I can speak pretty well on, because I'm from that generation that is just now getting into the whole sleep coding and screwed up stuff with Obama and all that fun junk. But customization, we've been talking about it and just how important it is to my generation. But I don't know if you guys get the extent to which it is important to us. It is the most important thing. We have so many video games. The entire goal is customization, is looking different, is looking, the way that you want to look and being the way that you want to be. We could even go down into the whole discussion about gender and that whole situation.
Oh my God, how many choices are there to define what gender you are? There's like 30 or whatever. Seriously.
There's more than that. But that's a part of this discussion, is that we're all about customization. We are all about min-maxing whatever stats we're trying to do. We want to pick how we look. We want to pick how we are seen. We want to pick everything. So this is really a potent argument to make, and I think that it's one that we really need to do a lot to illustrate, because it's not just catwalks and it's not just cell phones, but it's a lot of different things, and it has some serious potential.
We got to trademark it. Thank God this is going out and is publicly aired. It is documented that this idea had its genesis with us today.
Well, I don't really care so much about the provenance, as long as it gets out there and it works.
Success. Hey, if there's anybody that's going to get rich off of it, it should be us.
Yeah, okay, that's fine, but I don't...
Actually, I want it to work. I want it to work, and I think it does work.
Right. So, if anybody knows anybody working over at Rand Paul headquarters, GenOp, any of those places... I'm pretty sure they're interested and they want to know this stuff. So let's get on that. I just want power. Money is shallow and selfish. Just give me power. Very nice, Andy. It's. I'm sorry. No, that was probably Corey who wrote that. That was
awful, sure it was Corey.
Actually, it wasn't. Ha
ha. Well, because right now Corey has the power and Andy has none.
Well, and Corey's all about the Benjamins, huh?
Gosh.
Benjamins. All I ever see is Washingtons.
Since we are getting, I hate to like get like on track and stuff. I hate doing that. But since we are getting towards the end of the conversation and stuff, it's getting on the later end. I really do want to bring up that awesome ad. In Alabama, because it's not just the ad that's impressive, which is you can't put me in a box, and I need to bring the video up. But it wasn't just the ad. He was on the candidate whose name I'm forgetting because I wanted to talk about him, so of course I'd forget his name.
Darius. For some reason, I always remember his first name, Darius.
Thank you, Darius
Foster.
Foster. Okay.
Yes, Darius Foster was on Fox and Friends this morning or yesterday morning. I can't remember what day he was on.
It was a technically beautiful ad as well, because it was his voiceover.
Yes.
and he was describing who he is, but without specificity. And then he had a bunch of other people in his community filming it, lip-syncing his words. And it was, technically, it was really very compelling.
Yeah, I have the ad right here, so I'm gonna put it in. I'm gonna put it in the chat, and I'm going to play it here if that's okay with everybody.
Ooh.
It is a little bit long, but it's a minute and 10 seconds long, but it needs to be watched because it's just so freaking good. So let me get up the YouTube and all right, here we go. And I'm gonna hit play and just watch and be amazed. I'm sorry. I'm pausing this because I don't know. I don't know who.
I see it twice.
Who refreshed it? But I don't know where we were in the video. Corey and Andy, could you see any of that?
No.
No, it's just acting like it's loading. It's just a black screen.
Okay. Well, I put the link into the chat. So, you guys definitely like I don't know how we could do this. Because I really, really want to hear your guys' take on this ad, because it is just, it is of massive importance, I think.
Okay. One second, we'll watch it real quick and we'll come back.
Okay.
Yeah, my YouTube's not loading either. I've already seen the ad, but I'll go watch it again anyway.
Oh, well, you can still talk about it. I just wanted it to be played again so it was fresh in everybody's memory.
No, but, I agree.
It's the way that it gets put out, the visual of so many different people speaking with the same voice, and the concept of this can't be put in a box. He's not just one thing. He's not stereotypical.
Corey just muted JD. I wonder if I have the power to fix that. I don't know.
That's funny.
And now is the point in our show where we reach technical problems. Let's see. I think I can. Can I? There you go. There you go, JD. You're unmuted.
Yay.
it's because they're listening to the ad. That's why. I'm being quiet now.
Guys, we can't get the link to work, so I don't know what's going on.
Okay, you'll have to watch it later.
Yeah.
Boo hiss.
What's up, Fishy?
Boo hiss.
Oh, boo hiss, yeah. Suffice it to say, it's really, really, really good. It's an awesome ad, and I'll send it to you guys on Facebook. But it's everything that we need when it comes to messaging to, Democrat, because, not just to minorities or to the black vote or to, the Hispanic vote or whatever, it does something for Republicans. He's black and he's a Republican, it breaks stereotypes. No. Republicans are things other than just old white men. That's what, so many different things, so many different ways that this can relate to the party as a whole, and so many different ways that message is better than anything that we've really been doing from the party.
And it cost $300, he said, to make?
$300. And it's gotten him airtime on Fox News, interviewed on Fox News. He's gotten a ton of likes on Facebook over this. And this guy is a candidate for state rep in Alabama. And, it's just amazing. Let me see what the count is on the views, but it's massive.
150,000.
150,000. That's insane. That's awesome for a political ad. There are way fewer than 150,000 people in the district that he's running for. I'm sure. So that's gotta be huge for him. I hope that he's doing a great job of getting some funds raised because of it.
Well, and this absolutely proves that it isn't the number of dollars, it's how you use them. It's, do you have a good idea? Is it executed moderately competently? You don't have to have the huge production values. You have to have a good message. And it's, that's not a closing message to convince people to vote for him, but that is a dynamite opening message. Who are you? The first thing a politician has to do is define himself. And he does a beautiful job of not just defining who Darius is, but really speaking well for the Republican Party.
Yeah, and imagine what kind of, if you are a black conservative or a black Republican in his area.
Or an Asian Republican.
Or whatever. And you don't like talking about, your politics because you're going to get yelled down, screamed down, and people are not going to like you because of it. What does this do for you? What kind of an energy boost is this? What kind of a morale?
He just made it okay for Asians to come out as Republicans. He just made it okay for blacks to come out as Republicans.
Exactly. And he made it okay for gays to come out as Republicans. There's mm-hmm. going through the whole range of things. You are going to become marginalized to an extent in a lot of areas by saying that you're a Republican. So he, reaffirmed the fact that, hey, it's fine. It's just politics. So deal with it. I'm a real person. You're real people. And I'm serious about what I'm trying to do. I think that's, it's as you said, it's a dynamite opening message. It's a dynamite introduction to a candidate who I hope that we see a lot more of. In fact, even more impressed with was he did a Fox News. I said the Fox News interview that he did, where he talked about how he realized that he was a Republican, and this is one of the things that really impressed me about Susana Martinez at the Republican National Convention.
That was a beautiful story. Yeah.
When she came out with her story, "I'll be damned, I'm a Republican." That was a huge thing. That cemented my support for her for whatever it is that she's going to do going forward, because she's a great storyteller. So what Darius did was he talked about when he was 18 years old, and his grandmother, you know, brought him to go and vote, and she said, "Hey, you're going to go and vote, and you're going to vote the full Democrat line." And he said, "Why?" And she didn't have an answer for him, just because that's what we do. We vote the Democrat line. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what you're going to do. And that's not that. The next thing that he said, getting banned here. The next thing that he said was that his grandmother's not like that. That was surprising to him, because his grandmother, if there's something that, you know, she's going to explain it. She's going to explain exactly what it is, the reason that she's doing something. She's going to tell you. And that made him, you know, go and investigate conservatism, go and investigate Republicanism, and what, you know, what the values are that we stand for. And, you know, now here he is, his entire, you know, he's converted his grandma. He's, you know, running for office as a Republican. That's an amazing story. The way that he presented it, it needs to be an ad in and of itself. But just for the purposes of conservative messaging and great stories that we need to tell, that's one of them. That's absolutely one of them, and something that we need to have in our tool bag.
And I would like to point out that it's very interesting. Darius has been getting a lot of attention on Facebook and Twitter and whatever. But as they were posting the Fox interview on his page, JD felt very comfortable making the suggestion, hey, you need to make an ad with your grandma. And if we find opportunities to say things like that to candidates that resonate with us, we should definitely do that, not hesitate to reach out to them and offer an idea or help or support, because you never know. It might be something that spurs them to think of even something even more resonant. I don't know. But, yeah, kudos, JD, for hitting that up with them immediately.
I did very, very little, and I didn't get a response. So I intend to message their Facebook account, and I hope that I am not alone in that. I hope that more people will, you know, contact them and say, hey, we need you guys to... At this point, if I need to send him the $300 myself for him to get this thing being made, for him to get that thing made, I will do it. If that's what he wants, you know, if that's what he needs, I will personally donate the $300. I don't know if I'm allowed to, but if I am allowed to, and that's what he needs, I'm sending it tonight.
He's probably gotten some good donations from all of the publicity.
I'm hoping so. I mean,
and do you think his grandma would charge him $300 to be in a video with him? That's kind of
no, but I'm pretty sure, you know, he had to make the video. He has to make the video somehow, and that takes, you know, lighting and cameras. Ask Andy and Corey. They know about it. And a nice
casserole.
Well, is his grandma a Republican now? Because then she's probably pretty profit motivated. I'm just saying.
That's what the casserole's for. You can get grandma to do anything if you make her a nice casserole.
Maybe
that's just me. I don't know.
I suspect that since she was in the first video, that she'll be very happy to be in the subsequent videos. And for some reason, it looks like I'm out of sync. Am I out of sync? Is my audio coming through later than my video?
No, you're synced up just fine.
Okay, all right. Whatever. That's weird. Anyway, I hope that more people watch this ad. And I hope that more people go and communicate with Darius, and I hope that we get that ad made, the grandma one, because, man, I am so excited about this guy. I don't, you know, I hope that he's very, very good in the State House, and I hope that he leapfrogs the State House pretty quick and makes his way up the ladder to Congress or something else.
And beyond just the one individual, I like the idea that his ad was so creative but simple, and that it got so much popularity and notoriety so fast that it's going to give our consultant class and our advertising class a little bit more, maybe some more leeway to do something other than the candidate in front of a barn with the flag waving in the background and the horse walking by. I mean, because that's all our advertising is anymore, is America. And we have some clips of people waving, you know, waving flags and streamers on the at the 4th of July parade and vote for me and boom, that's the ad. We need stuff like this, and the fact that it did go viral really fast to inspire some of our advertising class to think outside the box when they're making ads for their candidates, that we need some different thinking because the old stuff is just not working anymore.
Yeah, and this is, again, thank you technology and the democratization of good editing equipment and media and all that stuff, because $300 for 100,000 views on YouTube, or 150,000 views on YouTube, that's an effective use of campaign funds, I would say.
Right, and more people know who Darius is nationwide, and probably also in his district, than are aware of any multi-thousand-dollar advertisement that Thad Cochran's group put on TV.
I guarantee you there are more people in the state of New Jersey that know that Darius is running for something than know that Jeff Bell is running for something.
Oh, bless his heart. And Jeff's a good guy.
I know.
It's just New Jersey.
It's not his fault. It's not
No,
his
not
fault.
At all.
But, yeah, so that's pretty good and just an amazing ad, and I hope we see a lot more of that kind of stuff coming out of, you know, the woodwork. This is something that is so hopeful and so, you know, it makes you feel good going mm-hmm. forward that we are in a good position, that we have quality coming up through the ranks, that our farm
there's food, nowhere to go but up.
Why do you gotta be like that? Why do you guys think like that? But seriously, though, it's a good indicator. It's a good sign. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we actually have some talent, and we're not just the old, you know, white guy party anymore. It's not the case. We have outgrown that. I think that is the upshot of this, is that we have outgrown that idea, that concept, that those shackles that have chained us for the past 40 years.
Oh, look, Corey and Andy just wrote a typical ad. Look at my wonderful family. I am a constitutional conservative. Lower taxes, smaller government, blah, blah, blah. I like babies. Vote for me. Yep. With America the Beautiful and a flag waving in the background. That is the Republican Party advertisement. And they just put a different floating head and change the name of the candidate. I mean, it absolutely is. And constitutional conservative, strong conservative, powerful conservative for Republican primary, they all are super con. I am hero master con. I mean, it's just...
Well, they're great Americans is what they are.
Oh, yes.
Great
yes.
Americans, that's what it is. Yeah. Somehow God, we managed
guns,
to...
Jesus, babies pack.
Yes. And if you can... Oh, yeah. If you can squeeze in, you know, castration of pigs, then that's a good one too.
Yeah, you bet.
I love Joni. She's the best.
There you go.
She earned my vote. I'm sorry.
Oh, too bad Fishy's muted because she's cracking up laughing.
She's not laughing. She's groaning.
More of a sigh.
I know.
I thought that was funny. I like having their meetings with a happy ending like this because, yeah, it really is. And there have been a lot of optimistic signs that I'm always going to look for a reason to be optimistic because there's so much bad news out there. that it becomes overwhelming. But there really is an awful lot of good stuff coming out as well, and it's starting to. And I think it's going to start being fun soon. At least I hope so. At least I hope so. It is for us anyway, right?
I had fun.
Yeah. And guys, we've talked for a very long time this evening.
That we have.
As per usual.
As usual, I will have all of the links ready to put in the video so that people watching will be able to check the description and find all of the things we talked about in link form right there.
So that the chat that's on the website, that it stays there. We're not actually deleting it, but it scrolls back and it's really annoying. But Fishy will put all of the links in the description on the YouTube video, so when you go to the YouTube channel, you can always find that months from now. And we will, this website of the bit.ly/therefinery will always be the web location for this show meeting every week. It'll just get updated with a different YouTube video. And we will be back. We will be back next week with the same crew of people. What's going to be? Do we have any new big primaries coming up in the next week that we know of?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not so much.
Nope. We'll see. We'll figure it out. Some kind of craziness is bound to happen in the next week.
That's right. Next week's craziness. And with that, we will conclude our broadcast for this week, and we'll see you guys next week.